Hello and welcome to the Raisin Man Show, and I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. Yep, you know the deal. It's Tuesdays. You know, I'm hoping you guys all are starting to like Tuesdays as much as me. Hope you're looking forward to Tuesdays because you can be anticipating hearing the show, hearing something that the Lord is going to do through the show and through this time we're spending together for this hour. And you're listening to us right here on WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia. What up, Chatham? How you guys doing today? Hope you guys are doing well. I'm doing well. I'm excited. I'm excited for the opportunity to bring you week 7. We're coming into the home stretch with this study series we're going through right now, Teachable Moments, week 7. And kind of excited about this week's topic. I've just been, you know, wondering what the Lord's going to do and how he's going to do and what he's going to do through it and with it and for people who are listening to it. And I really had to stay in the mindset of, what is the Lord doing with it for me? You know, because it's when you're talking to people and you want to share, and I'm not a ordained licensed, you know, minister of any type. So I don't have that knowledge, that seminary and background. I don't have that preacher's background. I don't have that whole mindset of where I'm bringing a message, but I had to come to the grips with preparing these devotionals, these talks or whatever, these messages for these shows. It takes a lot. You just can't just get up and just ramble on. And you have to pray and seek God and ask him, what does he want you to say? But what are you saying to me, Lord? And where are we going with this thing? And here we are, week 7. I wanted it to be usable. I want the Lord to really give us some tools just to be able to help us become better, really dial this thing in, really be able to be usable. I want people to look back and go, man, those 12 weeks of that study, I got something out of at least 1 week. I the selfish, fleshy side of it wants you to get something out of every week, but we're going to get right into it. So I hope you get something out of it this week. I know I have. Again, Teachable Moments, this is the series we're in week 7. The title of this week's message is Check Please. I don't want to be a waiter all of my life. And the Lord gave me that as a title, Check Please, because when you go to your restaurants and you go to places to eat, and even if it is fast food or a sit down restaurant, there's a certain stigma, a certain persona, a certain thought that comes with a person who's waiting tables, a person who's serving you at a restaurant, and a person who is actually providing that kind of, you know, service in your life, whether it be waiting tables, bringing you water, cleaning the table before, cleaning the table afterwards. Not necessarily cooking in the kitchen, but it's that service role. When having, you know, created and been a part of the Restore Me project, you know, the whole actors and actresses philosophy, you hear a lot of young actors and actresses before they make it big, before they get their first big break. You hear a lot of them, you know, being, you know, waiters and waitresses in restaurants and diners and dives and drive-ins, so to speak. You see them there where they're just hungry, not hungry for the food that they're serving not necessarily, but they're really just hungry for the opportunity to be on the big screen, to follow their dream, to go after their passion. And then so much so that they're so hungry that they're willing to do anything, take a job where the hours are flexible, take a job where people aren't really looking for you to be there except for the time when you're supposed to. So you can really go after and, you know, spend that time reading a script, going on auditions, going on second, third, or fourth callbacks, and for you, so you have that opportunity to get that one break. People don't really have the same philosophy when you really think about a waiter and a waitress. You think a lot of, oh, well, you're just a starving artist. You're just someone who's sitting in there, you know, waiting for your opportunity, you know, waiting for this and, you know, waiting for your callback, waiting for your big break. But the funny thing about a lot of people who are waiting tables, in some cases, they're the ones that are actually going after it, really going after the dream, pursuing a dream. A young man that I know that is in the industry trying to get that big break was waiting tables. Maybe currently is waiting tables. Right now he's getting ready to, he's transitioning from West Coast to East Coast to really pursue his passion, pursue his dream of being on Broadway. And I was actually talking with another friend a mutual friend of ours, and we were talking about, you know, topics that I was kind of, you know, rolling through them with them and fleshing out what I was going to say this week, what I believe the Lord was going to bring for this week. And they shared the story about him. And I was like, yep, there it is. Because they shared that he didn't want to wait tables all of his life. But a lot of us who think that we're doing some things, a lot of us that think that we're balling, that we're just doing all kind of crazy things to the limit of all that it can be done, we spend a lot of time in those same restaurants, going to the same haunts, going to the same places, spending our money at these tables where the people are waiting on us. But in so many cases, we're the ones that are actually waiting, because we're not, in so many cases, not doing our thing. We're waiting for the Lord. Oh, I'm waiting on the Lord to deliver me. I'm waiting on the Lord to bring me this. I'm waiting on the Lord to tell me what I'm supposed to do and walk in my calling. I'm waiting for the Lord to deliver me from this marriage. I'm waiting for the Lord to deliver me from this sickness. And it's so many things that we find that we're waiting on the Lord or waiting on someone else or waiting for whatever. I don't know what in the world that we're waiting on these days. No clue what we're waiting on. It makes no sense what we're waiting on, to be truthful. And I know the word does speak upon several cases about waiting. Those who wait, that ye who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall be mounted upon wings like angels, like eagles, sorry. And I get it. Those have its application in the right context. But a lot of us are sitting waiting with folded hands and folded, frowned up faces and clenched eyes, clenched fists, and we're just sitting and waiting for someone else to take responsibility for what we're doing, for waiting for us to hear from the Lord, waiting for someone to act upon what the Lord has told us to act upon, waiting for someone else to come in and move us, move something. I know, because I've been there for a long time waiting. I remember what comes to mind just now when my late wife was sick. She had gotten to the point where she felt strong enough to go to her cancer treatments by herself. And that bothered me. Not because I didn't want her to be strong enough to go to the treatments by herself, but I wanted to be able to take her to the treatments. I wanted to be able to drive her down there. I wanted to be able to know that she wasn't alone in this battle. I needed to serve her. I needed her to know that we were together in this thing, that she didn't have to worry about being by herself in those cold treatment rooms where she was getting some medicine that was actually trying to kill her in an effort to heal her. But she was waiting on the Lord to heal her, because she always did believe that it was, her illness was not unto death. We used to talk about it a lot. She's like, hey, this is not unto death. This is not unto death. And I was like, okay, babe, I'll stand in faith with you. We'll pray together with it. I'll pray with you. I'll pray for you that this is not unto death. So we waited. And we waited. Well, we later found out that it wasn't to death, because we transitioned from this life here to life with God. Because the word does speak clearly about absent from the body, present with the Lord. Now, okay, so we can become, I'm going to get back to the part where I was going, because I've come a long way apart, separated from where we were going with this thing. But when you really dig into the context, yes, absent from the body, present with the Lord, yes. So those of us who are going to heaven to be with the Lord, yes, are going to remain in his presence. But for those of us who are not going to be making it to heaven, are not going to remain in his presence, we'll be present with the Lord for a judgment. And you can get into the whole, we're not going to go into the whole revelationary time with, you know, the Bema seat and going before, you know, God and the judgment seat. We're not going to go into that context today with this. Maybe another study, but not today. But yes, once you're absent from this body, present with the Lord, it didn't say how long to be in that presence. So I get it. But she went from life to life. I believe she went to heaven. I believe she made it there. I believe she's with God now. I believe she's in heaven doing whatever the Lord has her to do. But for the rest of us that are still doing this thing here, we need to stop waiting. So we go back to the story. So where were we? When she got strong enough to drive herself, and I have to believe that that was her goal, so she didn't think that. I believe she honestly, the Lord gave me that she always wanted to show me that she was strong enough to be who she was going to be again. She was always an independent woman. She was always strong-willed, always the one that didn't need anyone to take care of her. That was wonderful. That was fine. But it had its moments where it came between us, where it gave us some struggles. It gave us some strife. And when she was sick and ill, that was an issue for me because I wanted her to know that she was there. But she needed to show herself that she was there. She needed for herself to prove that she was strong enough and well enough that she was going to kick this thing. So she needed to prove to herself by driving. And driving was her way of proving that. But I remember each day that she would drive away. And it's funny, the Lord even just puts me in that mode right now, puts me right back in that memory. I'm standing in her house in Menifee, in Jackson and Evans' room, which is right over the garage. It's the only room that you can definitely see all of the driveway without obstruction. And she'd pull the sequoia out and, you know, she'd always say, hey, I'll be gone. I'll be back. I'm going to go to my treatment. And no matter where I was in the house, at that time we had an office downstairs. I was working from home a lot and I'd be in the office doing, doing my telecom thing, supporting customers. And I said, okay, babe, be careful. And I couldn't, my office had a couple of windows and one window was right off of the driveway. But the way the house was set, I couldn't see the truck come out. So as soon as I would hear her, close the door to the garage, I would get up on my desk and I would run upstairs real quick so I could get to that window. Because I wanted to see her drive away. And I would stand in that window week after week and I'd watch her drive away. We lived in our street was a cul-de-sac. It ended in a cul-de-sac, but we were kind of in that the elbow was kind of straight when you come down the street towards our house. You turned right away from our house and into the cul-de-sac. So we were the house where if you didn't stop, someone would drive right up in our driveway. So when she backed out, I would just be able to see her drive straight down our street. And it was always sunny days that she went, because during the time she was taking treatments, it was, somewhere between, April, May, June before the summer, because the kids were at school. I remember I was left in the house by myself while she would pull out and she'd drive away and I would watch her. It was like on the right side of the street away from us was where the models were built. So there was five plans of houses on our next to us, and there was a repeat house in this vacant lot that used to be where the parking lot for the models used to be, and then there was our house. So I used to watch her drive away. I used to count them out. There were six houses she drove by, and then there was a little wash at the end where the rainwater would gather and go into the drains. And so there was a turn out to the west right there. So I'd watch her drive. I would count the houses as she drove away and she would turn. And I would listen. I would wait there at the window. And as she drove away, I was waiting at the window so I could hear the truck till it got out of sight. And I would wait there so I couldn't think I could hear the truck anymore as she would drive away. That I would wait in that window and I would think about imagining where she was along the way headed to her treatment. That I would wait there at the window wondering how the treatment was going. Was the room warm? Was it room too cold for her? How she was doing? So I would wait at that window for probably 15 to 20 minutes after she drove away. Just imagining. After she died, that was the same window where I stood and I watched the kids walk to school. And I would wait for them to get to a certain place where I could then go into my bedroom, and then I would wait till they got to a certain point so I could look and see them, the little ones anyway, get to a point where I could see them getting towards the elementary school, because there was elementary school right behind our house. As the kids got older and, I was driving or not driving and whatever the situation was, I found myself waiting on someone to call. Because while Sandy was sick, the phones were really active. People were really right there for us. It was really exciting and helpful and humbling for people to to help us. There was a lot of commotion. But the days and weeks after she died, the phone stopped ringing as much. The house stopped having as much activity, and the text messages started to fall off, and the same people that were rallying. I mean, I get it. I'm not for all of those that helped our family during that pivotal time, and for all those who still continue to sow into our family and help our family, whether it be prayerfully helping us in person or being at a place where we're going to be or certain things that you do. I thank you for those. So I publicly apologize. I publicly thank all of those who did anything from a meal to gas cards to whatever it was. And I apologize to anyone who I hadn't been able to thank in person or publicly, but I thank you for those who babysat, for family and friends who were a part of our struggle, part of our sorrow, part of our time, there when the times were really, really bad and there when times really weren't so bad. But I found myself after Sandy died waiting for that same level of support, that waiting for that same community to show up, waiting for those same people to bring a meal, waiting for the same people to call, waiting for family to come by, waiting and waiting and waiting, waiting for my dad to come by and help, waiting for whatever. And I found myself angry in the wait because I was waiting on people that weren't that were no longer showing. I was waiting in a situation where it was no longer what I thought it was going to be. I didn't know what it was going to be because I'd never been a widow before. So I didn't know what it was. I'd never been in that kind of situation before. So I wasn't sure where I was supposed to be, what we were supposed to do. So I found myself waiting now for the kids to get out of school. And I would wait, and I would work, and I would wait for the next ticket to come. I would wait for this, and I didn't know what else to do with my life but wait. I had some goals and aspirations that I had in life, so I waited. But I waited on them because I didn't know what to do with the pain I was feeling, so I waited. And I, waiting upon the Lord, I used the Romans 8:28. As my mantra. It was my catch-all scripture. It was all things work together for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. It felt like a defeated scripture for so many years, but then I gained strength because it does speak to all things, not just the happy times. I was stuck in the sad times, so not just the sad time. It was all things work. The happy, the sad, the good, the bad, and the ugly, as they say. All things work together for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. So that's a twofold scripture. All things work together for those who love God. So you have to love God. And for two, you have to be called according to his purpose. So it was purposed for all of us to live, and it's purposed for all of us to die, whether or not we're going to, you know, die peaceful death, tragic death, die sick, you know, die in our sleep. Whatever it is, we all have a purpose in this thing. All right, we're going to come right back. We're going to pick it up right there. You're listening to The Raising Men Show right here on WKBY 1080 AM. And we're in the midst of week 7 of our study. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. My name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.
And we're right back here on the Raising Men Show. And again, I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. In that first segment, we talked about waiting. We dealt a lot with, well, we began to finish up the segment, actually, with Romans 8, verses 28, when we talked about all things working together for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. And so in this particular week, week 7 of our study, again, the topic of it is called Check, Please. And I don't want to be a waiter all of my life. What are you waiting on in life? Are there some things that you just are sitting around waiting for someone else to do for you, waiting for someone else to say it's all right, waiting for someone else to empower you, waiting for someone else to do something, to move something, to show you something, to give up, move up, move out. And I sat here in the last week or two thinking about the wait and the what have I been waiting on, and what does waiting look like? What does being a good waiter look like? And you talk about even having people serve you, and what does that even look like when people are serving you? And I know when waiters are serving you, when you're being waited on, you usually will pay a good tip and a fair, you know, even an exorbitant price for people to serve you as you're waiting for your food to come, as you're waiting for your water to come, as you're waiting for a napkin or a knife or fork or spoon or whatever it is. We want to be served well during the wait. So what do we think about God in that wait? I know when I was waiting on the Lord to really fill that void in my heart that I've been feeling with the loss of my wife, I can't say that I was a good customer. In fact, I know I was not a good customer because I haven't necessarily been waiting well. I don't necessarily, I haven't been waiting well at all. Let's just be real. I haven't been waiting well at all. Because I wanted the Lord to fix this thing like right now. I don't want to feel this pain and hurt anymore. I don't want to keep looking at these kids and looking into their eyes about and having to be the answer man for everything in their life, every single moment of every day. What's the plan, Dad? Sometimes, you know, doggone it, Dad ain't got no plan. Dad don't even want to get up and wash his backside and brush his teeth. I don't have no plan. But how do you tell that to your child, whether it be 4, 5, 6, 18, or 20-something, how do you tell them that Dad doesn't have a plan? Because there's just some days when I didn't have a plan. But the Lord really put this on my heart the last few days and reminded me that we have to be able to believe. Well, let's put it this way. The Lord had to remind me and ask me the question, do you believe in God? Do you believe in me? Or do you believe me? Ugh. That in itself just killed me. Because I'm like, okay, so God, are you asking people, do they believe in the fact that you're real and that there is a God? And it's so easy for even atheists to believe that there is a God. They're like, oh, I don't believe it, there's no God. Well, for you to have believed that there were not a God, that means there's a belief that there is a God that you're trying to contradict. So that, yes, there was a huge belief worldwide, internationally, come or go, hell or high water. There's a belief in the fact that there is a God. But that's not the thing. So you think for Christians, we would believe, okay, well, we believe in God. Yes, I believe in God. That's a good thing, right? And what are you saying? What I'm saying is, believing in the fact that there is a God and believing in a God is one thing. But when the Lord actually begins to talk to you and you have that relationship with Christ in the fact that in the way that you know what the Lord is saying to you and how he's saying it to you and that when he's saying it to you and why he's saying it to you in terms of you're asking and you're being patient and you're waiting on the answer to come patiently and proactively waiting and answering. But the question then becomes, do you believe God when he speaks to you in such a way that he gives you the answers to the things that you've been asking for? Do you believe God when he told you to go start that ministry? Do you believe God when he told you to pack up and move from east to west? Do you believe God when he told you to go to school? Do you believe God when he told you to marry that person? Do you believe God when he takes that person from you? Do you believe God when he tells you when tough times are going to come? Do you believe God when he tells you the good times are going to come? Do you believe God that weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning? Do you believe God when he says that we live by faith, 2 Corinthians 5:7, but not by sight? New King James. So with the King James version, say we walk by faith, and even the whole in doing the study of the walking, it's a walk in terms of changing your life. It's a walk in terms of how you live. It's a walking in the essence of how you are to live and to be and to go. Not just walking in terms of being a transportation source from place to place. It's how you walk actively out your life before people, before God specifically, but how you walk out your life. So we live by faith. We walk by faith. But to do that, you have to believe God when he says things to you. Oh, that's the thing. So I'm trying to make sure we provide some study questions, and I didn't probably have not done a good job with providing the study questions the last couple of weeks in here, but this is the main question we need for everyone. I keep saying we. Who's the we? It's just me in here talking. It's just me leading the study. So maybe the we is the Lord. I mean, it's the Lord, what the Lord wants, and I'm just the vessel here to talk. So the we here is what we need you to understand is, do you believe in God only? Or do you believe God when he's telling you something? Only you can answer that question. I can't answer it for you. This is not one of those, Bible thumping, programs where I'm going to take up an offering. And then, yeah, if you want to sow into the program, feel free. But because I pay to be on here. I'm not being paid anything. This is just me. So you need to understand, when the Lord told me to do this, do it. When I was talking about coming back on air, having conversations about that, the Lord was leading that, prompting that, guiding that, directing that. Do you believe God when he tells you that certain people need to be cut out of your life? Or are you still hanging around with those people because you're lonely? Because you don't like the sound of your own voice in a quiet room with bare walls? Or maybe the walls have stuff on it, but do you believe God when he tells you that you need to get up and find a job? Do you believe God when he told you need to get up and leave that job? Do you believe God when he told you you're going to be healed from your sickness? Do you believe God when he told you you're going to go through a sickness as an example for someone else? Do you believe God when he told you something, anything, whatever he told you to do? For me, I believe God when he told me, I was arguing with God. I was crying out to the Lord, being all some kind of way about life and just mad. It's like, God, I want Raising Men to be international, worldwide. I wanted it to be big. I wanted it to be, I wanted a lot of, social media people to follow and like the program and it'd be interesting. I want to be able to speak on platform and, arenas. I want to be able to be out there. I'm just being transparent with you. I'm being 100 with you. That's what I wanted. I had this. I watch other people's programs. I watch what other people have to say. And I'm not throwing shade on anyone at all. And I'm real careful when I say this, because things are so easily taken out of context this day, especially in the era of social media. And people ask, well, anybody listening to your program in that way anyway? So what does it matter? But I watch people who are entertainers, who live a certain way publicly and a certain way privately that a lot of us will never see. But it's funny when they'll have this raucous life in public or in social media public, right? For us to believe that they live a certain way, they're doing a certain thing, and they have this image, this persona that's larger than life, and then all of a sudden, tragedy hit them. All of a sudden, there's this flip. And that tragedy could be the fact that they're not selling records and they're not, that's not popular. Nobody wants to have them be an actor because they don't look the role anymore. You're not the 25-year-old or 18 or 30-year-old actor anymore. You're now 45, 50, 60, gray or whatever. And you're not able to bring that crowd to the arena and feel like you used to. And all of a sudden, you got to come back home. You got to find your roots. You got to get a new audience. Let some tragedy happen to that actor or actress. And all of a sudden, they have this platform where they're talking all this wonderful thing about all these wonderfully socially positive causes. And I was like, Lord, I got a socially positive cause. I got 5 boys that I'm trying to raise with your guidance and leading and you just being there for this. But the Lord reminded me, and a friend of mine that I'm trying to keep in touch with, help them out and be a mentor to them, be a guide, let them be a Timothy to me and me be a Paul to them. they were coming through town. And just before they arrived, I was having this rant with God. And he called just after I was ranting and raving to the Lord about what I wanted and what I thought I wanted from raising men. So I talked to him on the phone, and when I got off the phone with him, he was arriving at my house before, you know, shortly after that phone call and my rant. It's real clear, Lord says, that's what raising men is all about. It's that one-on-one. It's that being accessible to people, to men. Not have this platform as divide or this chasm, that moat separated from people. Your mission and plan is to be someone that's accessible, someone that people can touch, someone that people can say that they know, that they've talked to me, they've seen me in public, they've seen me interact, they've met the kids before, they know the boys, the men, the young men. They know it's not just a show. It's something, it's a lifestyle for us. Raising Men is more than just a license plate. It's more than a community social media platform. It's more than a show on Tuesdays right here at WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia. And more than a show on our archive pages on the raisingmenshow.com or .org, sorry. Or it's .com, yeah. It's more than that. It's a lifestyle. It's who we are. It's the ability to help men become better men, husbands, fathers, relatives. Be better in general, better for our community, better in a practical sense, not better in terms of, you know, financially, whatever, but just better at what we do, better at who we are, better at boundary setting to make sure that we're protected, better at health and make sure we're doing better, better at making wise money decisions, better at making wise choices with people, better at making wise parenting options and choices, better at being present with our kids, better with being present for ourselves when we need to be, better at living a life before God openly, broken transparently, better at loving God, better at smiling, living a life that's an example. Because when my wife died, I swear to you, I've shared this before on the show, that I didn't know where to turn. I didn't know who to go to. I didn't know how do I find or where do I go to look for a person, a man who's raising five boys. Because society, it's easy for the society to show women raising kids, you know, everything from the octomom to whatever, especially single mothers do nowadays. And the whole knock on us men is that we don't take care of our kids, that we don't know how to do nothing. We don't know how to cook. We don't know how to clean. We choose not to. And we don't know, you know, how to be good husbands and fathers. Now, I can't honestly say I was the best husband in the world. I'm sure I had a lot of failings there. So I can honestly say I'm not the best, but when I get an opportunity to do it again, yeah, I'm going to be a whole lot better than I was. I want to be better in so many areas of my life. But the key, though, is I'm a dad all day. It doesn't matter if I'm an employee on a job. I've still got to be a dad. The Lord has blessed me to be able to work from home, but the kids are still here. And even when they're off to school, I'm still here. And when they get home, someone's got to, in some cases, take them and pick them up and get them to and fro. Someone's got to make sure the dinner's ready, or someone's got to make sure that I got to make sure I'm teaching them how to cook and be self-sufficient and do dishes and do cleaning areas and do cleaning and do washing. And so that is all a matter of time and timing and being obedient to the Lord and listening to what he wants us to wants me to do and wants us to have for the house. Listening to how to even decorate a house and clean a house. Listening for, and this is actively, not just sitting around waiting, because if I waited for someone to come and clean my house, the house would be god-awful nasty. And I lived in a god-awful nasty place for about a year. And, you know, my God, it was probably one of the worst years of my entire life. It was horrible. I just didn't really care that year. I didn't teach the kids nothing, I don't believe, in that year, other than, well, I take it back. It's not true. I did teach them how not to live. I taught them how not to be a dad. I taught them how not to be present. I taught them how not to be a good man. I taught him how not to be. Yeah, how not to be their dad. I taught him how I'm not going to be ever again. Yeah, that's what I taught myself to. Went through a now, and after that stretch is over, I don't ever want to live in, not necessarily in that particular place physically. I don't ever want to live there again, ever in my life. Then what I think that one of the biggest motivators is, I was talking to someone about that, about living in that particular space. And I remember a person told me that I'm afraid if you move into that place, you'll never come out of there again. And, you know, and it was funny because I was hurt and I had to ask for a check, please. I'm out of here. And I'm going to be a waiter all of my life, because for someone to put a curse on me, if I did this one thing, I'll never be any better. I was like, how dare you say that to me? You don't have the right to speak that death over my life. I don't accept that word curse. I'm sorry. I don't accept what your words are, because I know what the Lord has called me to be. I know what the Lord had told me to do, but the Lord had told me to go to that location and live and stay. And it doesn't matter what anyone thinks about your decisions. You have to be confident in your decisions between you and God, period, the end. It doesn't matter what anyone says about your friendships and relationships, where I call you back, I don't call you back, you call me back, I call you back, you text me back, I text you back, or I don't text you, I don't communicate with you, that's fine. It doesn't matter, you don't communicate with me. It doesn't matter, because if I'm setting a healthy boundary and doing what the Lord is calling me to do, if you are doing the same, then bless God, we're good. The whole issue when we get to the scripture talking about, you know, obedience is better than sacrifice. I'd rather be obedient to the Lord and not talk with you than it is to be for me to sacrifice my own feelings and be angry and in sin while I'm talking to you or texting you back on the phone. That's real. That's application of the word. That's practical. That's not me being, oh, you're just being too super spiritual. You should be able to talk to somebody when they call you. No, why? Nobody paying my cell phone bill. Okay, it's another song. Paying my telephone bill. No, you're not doing that. I don't need to entertain any of my extra time, whether I have it or not, whether I wanted to it or not. I don't have to do anything. You don't have to do anything that you don't want to. We don't have to do anything that, except for what? Breathe, pay taxes, and die. And that's really where we get lost in some cases. So I'm calling check, please, when it comes to dealing with, you know, issues and situations in my life that were word curses on me. No, check, please. We're canceling all those curses. I don't want to be a waiter anymore. I'm not serving you. I'm not even sitting here anymore waiting for someone to make a change in my life, because the Lord is calling for me to do something. This show is one of them. The Lord is calling me to do this, to share where I'm coming from, to share on Raising Men, our social media, to share on Instagram and Facebook, to share through our life and live it out publicly. Whether one person's life has changed or 100 million, bless God for the one. Pastor John Hansen had us going through a series, All for the One. Yes, all for the one. This I do all for the one who is like me. And I don't want anybody to think if I'm like me, being a single father raising five kids after their wife died. No. You pick any one area of my life, I'm living my life for that one person who's looking for that one instance in my life to help you say, check, please, I'm done. I'm not living like that anymore. I can get beyond that, because he did it. Because Craig lived a life out loud, which is Raising Men, showed me how that we can live a life and thrive and be triumphant in what the Lord has given. To be men of faith, men of valor, and just be truthful and real and transparent about everything that we're feeling. If you pick one thing about me that you like that can help you along your way, bless God, that it makes every part of our journey, every tear, every time I was called out, or justly or unjustly, every time I didn't want to sleep and I didn't want to do this show, any time I cried, any tear, it's worth it. Because there's so many days, even sitting here preparing for this show, that I didn't want to do it. Thinking, oh, who's listening anyway? No one wants to hear anything that you have to say. And that's why I got off here the first time. Was on WKBY for almost a year prior and got off. Yeah, we had some real bad financial problems. Couldn't afford to, you know, couldn't figure out how to pay for the show anymore. Couldn't be on anymore. Bless Pastor Larry, you know. He helped us out, worked things out for as long as we possibly could work things out, then we just couldn't do it anymore. But here we are again. Bless God, we're able to do and be who the Lord called us to be and do, whether there's anyone listening or one, to help someone say, check, please. I'm not waiting on anything negative anymore. And I'm going to constantly live my life by faith. I'm going to have a 2 Corinthians 5:7 mentality. I'm going to live by faith. I'm going to walk by faith and not by sight, because it can get crazy out there. I was just, and Lord, it led me to check in on a few of the Timothys in my life just this past week. And the same topic, same word kept coming up a lot. Anxiety. I'm stressed and anxiety. I'm playing. And I started to get a little frustrated. I'm like, what in the world are you mad? Are you anxious about? You're young. In a lot of cases, most of you ain't got no kids. So what in the world could you possibly be anxious for to give you anything to even cause any form of anxiety? I got 5 kids trying to do whatever. I'm working 2-3 jobs. What are you anxious for? But it comes when we allow the Lord to allow the enemy to talk at you. But you need to tell the enemy, sorry, check please, I'm getting up out of here. All right, we're going to be going to this next break. We're also supporting our friend Nikki Dodge, Nicole Dodge. Her house burned down. This is a public service announcement that I did. We're still raising money for her on her GoFundMe page. Please listen to this. We'll be right back after this message, going into the final segment of the show, talking closing out week 7. And we'll be right back and listen to the Raising Men show right here on WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia. Hey everybody, this is Craig again. I've never done a PSA before. This is my first one, but this cost is more than worth it. Nikki Dodds, a good friend of mine from years ago, her house burned down. She lost everything, but they're still staying in the burnout home. The ceiling's caving in, 2 boys staying in there, a mother, and they've lost everything. She's got a GoFundMe going on right now. Check our social media and listen to her story and let the Lord lead you. If you can help, please do.
My name is Nikki. I have 3 kids. The 2 youngest are with me. One's 21, the other is 13. On Friday, we woke up at 4:00 in the morning. Someone had stuffed a mattress under a car in the back and set the car on fire. And when the car exploded, it hit the house and it burnt the house down. So my boys and I didn't have anywhere to go. And the only shelters that were around don't take any animals. And because of the age difference, my boys would have been split up, and they would have been split up with me. I would have to go to a woman's shelter, and then they would have to go separate places, and then, of course, the animals would have had to go somewhere else. So to keep my family together, we're still living in the house right now. So my girlfriend started a GoFundMe, and we are just trying to get some money together so that we can get out of this house. The roof is starting to fall in. You can still smell fire, and it's just, I don't know what we're breathing in. So I really just want to get my family out of here as quickly as possible.
And we're back to the Raising Men show. Again, I encourage people to support this young lady. She's got a GoFundMe page. We do have that on our social media. And can you imagine the weight, how that must feel? Ugh. And even just saying that, the Lord's brought this word to mind. When you talk about waiting, and I've been talking about waiting all this time, these first 2 segments, it's W-A-I-T, meaning not going anywhere, the being static, the standing still, the not moving forwards, the that kind of wait. You're in a position of trying to see what's coming next. But in that wait, you can feel a weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, of your situation. Feel like it's crushing you. And that is an awful feeling. I know we've all felt the moments where we're not sure if we're going to be able to breathe or lift our head up off the floor when you're in that situation, when we're waiting for our change to come, waiting for our situation to get better. But you can feel the weight of the waiting on us, and that is tragic. But you know what? I know I have another friend that I always just talk about. Like, we need to praise our way through. We need to worship our way through. We need to praise God in advance. And I get it. And let's talk about some practical explications and some practical examples of how do we, you know, call the, you know, waiter, check please. So I'm not going to be waiting here anymore. I'm getting up out of this place. I'm getting up out of this place of pity for my situation, and oh, woe is me. And that was one of the things, as you know, when shortly after Sandy died, that's one of the things I didn't want to do, was I didn't want to come outside. And then I spent a lot of time in the house, and I didn't leave the house unless I had something that I just had to do that just couldn't have been accomplished at any other point without me leaving the house at that moment, whether it be taking kids to school, or, you know, we had to go, you know, get groceries or something like that. Then I would leave the house. And people began to ask me, well, why do you feel that way? Why didn't you want to leave the house? And for me, I didn't want anybody to give me those pity eyes when they look at me and go, oh, you're that guy. Yeah, what do you mean? Yeah, I'm that guy. Yeah, you're that guy whose wife died. You're that guy. Well, and for so many years, I didn't want to be that guy anymore. I didn't want to have the weight of that experience. I didn't want to have the weight of that testimony. I didn't want to have the weight of that test. I didn't want to have the weight of that pain on the outside of me. And I didn't want anybody to see, just in case the weight became so much for me that day that I wasn't smiling. I've talked to people before and they've often told me, well, you know, if I didn't know you, if I didn't know your background, I swear it was no big deal. I swear it was nothing going on, because you don't have that look that there's anything wrong. You don't have that look that it's really all that bad. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's not all that bad. I lost my wife. I'm raising 5 kids by myself. What do you mean? How much worse do you think it needs to be for anybody to think that it's bad? Okay, so maybe I shouldn't smile. Okay, maybe I shouldn't try to be on air. Maybe I should, you know, we all drive a bucket. Maybe we should, well, because the cars aren't new. So, okay, but at least, bless God, we have them. But there was many days when we didn't have anything to buy cars, gas for the vehicles we had. But the Lord provided. The Lord, I'm telling you, the Lord provided. So how do you know in your waiting when it's time to call for the check? Because when you're in a restaurant, a sit-down restaurant, I'm not talking about going to, you know, I'm not even naming any fast food because they're not sponsoring the show. So if you go to your favorite eating spot and you don't have a metal fork and, you know, a china piece of plate in front of you, you can't call for your check. When you go to those fast food joints, you got to pay for your stuff in advance so you can go sit down in one of their seats and be dead. No, nobody's serving you in a situation like that. You can ask, excuse me, can you bring whatever? And it's only a few restaurants we actually have a person wiping a table that will actually go bring you something, you know, whether it's, you know, extra condiment or whatever. But that's not really why they're out there. They're out there to clean the table, to get kind of encourage you to get up out of the way so they can turn that table for someone else. But when you really think about it, when you're sitting at a table where you have some silverware and you haven't paid that bill yet, and they're serving you on, oh my gosh, they're serving you on the tab, they're serving you on the credit in anticipation of you paying. So while we think that we're being waiting on this, the Lord is actually providing for you in your wait. The Lord is what you're talking about. Those who will wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Yeah, well, we're sitting here waiting for the Lord to do for us. The Lord's already sending our situation to someone else. The Lord is sending someone else to come and wait on us while we think we're in that waiting spot. So while we're in that moment where we just don't think we can see our way clear through the tears, there's someone over there that's coming to give us that hug, to call and check on us. It may not come in the way that we want it to come. It may not come in any kind of manner that we even think is even somewhat right. And in some cases, the people that are coming to say have just got it all the way wrong. It's all the way backwards. But it's someone that the Lord is sending in our path to cross, to be a part of our lives, to do something for Him, for the kingdom. Now, granted, not in every case. There are some people that are just coming to rub salt in the wounds, coming to see. Because there's some people that are out there that really love to see you when you're down. They love it when you're down. They love it when you're feeling bad. They love it when you're hurting, because that makes them feel better. Because when your change does come, and when you believe enough to allow the Lord to move, when you believe enough to allow the angels that were whose hands were tied and locked in field of battle with the enemy's forces, because that was our fear that released the enemy when our faith had released the angels for the blessing to come, but then our fear got involved, and so the fear blocks the faith, and the blessing is all tied up because we just didn't have the faith and belief in God that he was going to do it. So we believe in the fact that there was a God, but we didn't believe what God was going to say. So some of us, when you really think about the Lord says we're going to have a ministry to really touch people and be a generational opportunity, but we don't believe in what the Lord said. We don't believe what God said. We believe in the fact that a God was out there capable of saying it, but we didn't believe that God said it when he said it about us. Some of us standing in faith with and for someone else's ministry and believe, oh, bless God, their ministry is wonderful. Bless God, their ministry is going to be abundant. I'm going to go sow into their ministry. What happened to building your own? What happened to tithing and sowing a seed into your own ministry so you can build what the Lord already told you to go build? What happened to that church you were supposed to set? Oh, I'm not going to call any names on the show. I'm just going to send a link to them so I know they already know who they are. Some of the people having some ripple effects in people's lives have some ministry the Lord's already called you out to go do, but we haven't quite moved and stepped out on faith because we're afraid, because we believe in the fact that there is a God, don't necessarily believe what God has said. So do you believe God when he said something to you, or do you believe in the fact that there is a God out there that's capable? When we get to the fact, when we know that God is more than capable, not just for other people, but he wants to, is capable, able, and wants to for us, and is willing for us, and is doing for us, that changes things, that allows God to move when we make those sincere requests. God, I need you to do this for me, not because I need you, because I need you, because I need a bill to pay, but God, I need you to be God in our life. I check, please. I need to have that fear to be removed from the situation of poverty mindset and poverty mentality to the thought of a kingdom mentality, a kingdom living. I need to be kingdom minded, God. You know, check, please, enemy. Move out of the way so I can get up off this bed of affliction, get this sickness out of my life so I can stop being arthritic, so I can start having this heart condition. Check, please. I need to stop eating all that nasty food that I'm putting in my mouth so I get this diabetes and this arthritis and everything else to go away. Check, please. I need to get back in the gym and get on the treadmill and push these weights and move some plates around. Check, please. I need to stop letting these people suck the life out of me and my wallet and my mentality and my space and the air I'm breathing, because they want to be a part of something that they think they're going to see more so than we are. So that's something I need to see for myself. There's some people out there that see more in us than we see in ourselves. So check, please, to the low mentality, the low sense of self-esteem. So I'm not trying to be a waiter anymore in my life. I don't need to wait on myself. I don't need to wait on anybody else's dream to come true. I don't need to wait and help anyone else do anything else that the Lord has told them to do. Check, please, to the fact that I'm going to do what the Lord told me to do. Which is, this is one of them. An opportunity to speak and share the word as the Lord gave me for all of those who need and want and have to hear it. To the writings, the books that we're supposed to do. What are we waiting on? Oh, I'm so tired today. Waiting for the workload to get lighter. I'm waiting for a break, waiting for vacation to come. What'd you do all weekend? Anybody resting all weekend? If you wrote 10 words a day, if you wrote a paragraph a day, if you wrote a page a day on that book that you said you're working on, if you wrote a poem an hour, if you wrote a line to a poem every few days, you'd have a poem probably by the end of the week. If you wrote lyrics to the song that you said you wanted to write for the last 16 years, you probably had the song written by the end of the month. If you would stop waiting and get into the activity and live into your life, some of us are waiting for the right husband or wife to come around. But we don't want to leave the house. We don't want to do anything to put ourselves out there. Now, I get it. The mailman or the Amazon delivery person could come to the door to deliver your package. And all of a sudden it's, oh, then my spouse right there, whoever it is, right, delivers, come right to my door and knock. Yeah, I get it. It's like the old saying, you know, about the person who was on top of a of a building during a rainstorm, and the rain was getting, you know, heavier and heavier, and the water was getting higher and higher. The building was falling apart, and somebody came by in a, you know, small boat and tried to get him to come off. They were, come on down, jump. Come on, I got you. Come on, let's go, let's go, let's go. I'm here. No, the Lord's going to save me. I'm waiting on the Lord. The Lord's going to save me. Person, a little small boat goes by. A much bigger boat come by. Come on, I'm here to rescue you. Come on, we got to go. The water's getting higher. You're going to drown. Let's go. No, I'm good. I'm waiting for the Lord to save me. The Lord's going to save me. The Lord's going to save me. I'm going to stay right here on top of this house praying to the Lord. Just praying, the top of our lungs, just praying. Helicopter come by, drop us down a ladder, and come on, let's go. We got to get out of here. This is not safe. You need to be on. Let's go, let's go. Nope. I'm going to stay right here. I know the Lord's going to save me. He's going to fight my battles. I'm right here. The Lord's going to save me. You wait and see. Person died. Got to heaven and then absent from the body, present with the Lord. And said, the person has got a chance to see, you know, Jesus face to face and say, hey, what happened? Jesus, where were you, Lord? I was on the roof calling to you. Didn't you hear me? I mean, what? He let me die. The Lord's like, I didn't let you die. I sent two boats and a helicopter. What you want me to do? What more do you want God to do? Do you believe in God? Or do you believe God? It's time for so many of us to say, check, please. I need my check. I need to go. I'm not going to be a waiter anymore in my life. Again, you've been listening to the Raising Men Show. This is week 7 of our study, Teachable Moments. Week 7's topic was called, Check, Please. I don't want to be a waiter anymore. I hope that some of you got something out of this to help you understand that you don't want to be a waiter anymore. You don't have to be a waiter anymore. And you've been listening to us right here on WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia. And you can catch all of our podcasts on theraisingmenshow.com. That's theraisingmenshow.com. Again, I'm going to leave in the show this week. I'm just going to replay that excerpt for Nikki Dodds, the single mom whose house burned down. I just pray that you would, you know, let the Lord lead you and support her in a GoFundMe project to find a new place and restart their lives. See you all again next week.
My name is Nikki. I have 3 kids. The 2 youngest are with me. One's 21, the other is 13. On Friday, we woke up at 4:00 in the morning. Someone had stuffed a mattress under a car in the back and set the car on fire. And when the car exploded, it hit the house and it burnt the house down. So my boys and I didn't have anywhere to go. And the only shelters that were around don't take any animals. And because of the age difference, my boys would have been split up and they would have been split up with me. I would have to go to a woman's shelter and then they would have to go separate places. And then of course the animals would have had to go somewhere else. So to keep my family together, we're still living in the house right now. So my girlfriend started a GoFundMe and we're just trying to get some money together so that we can get out of this house. The roof is starting to fall in. We can still smell fire, and it's just, I don't know what we're breathing in. So I really just want to get my family out of here as quickly as possible.